Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Tour Catch-Up,
Grigor Dimitrov wins his first title since 2017.
Rafael Nadal withdraws from the Australian Open.
And Naomi Osaka and Emma Raducanu make their comebacks.
Kim, Chris, today is the 8th of January and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. It is a brand new season. It is 2024. The tennis has begun and we are back refreshed and revitalized after the 2023 season for another 12 months of non-stop tennis. How are we doing? Are we all excited?
I feel like I just spoke to you last week, Joel, but I think in the off-season, weren't you growing
a beard? Is there an off-season? I'm so confused. Is there an actual off-season in tennis?
It feels like yesterday we were at UTS in London, and yeah, Joel, you had quite a robust beard, but it's been trimmed.
I have decided to trim it, yes. Benoit Paire did give me some advice, and I chose not to take it on board. The beard got too itchy. And I decided to get a trim.
But you could grow it. Is that what you're saying?
I could have grown it more, but okay. I didn't want to. But don't worry, guys. I've kept the mustache, which is a bit awkward because at work, people just assumed I'm just still doing Movember.
Right. Well,
and no, it's actually a choice.
Maybe the off-season wasn't long enough for you to grow a beard is what I'm thinking after that. But you'll have to apologize to Benoit the next time you see him for that.
Well, we are back and we do have a new season that's already kicked off and got underway. Loads of players are back as well, including Rafa. Well, he's kind of back, but he's gone away again, hasn't he? So it's been a bit of a rollercoaster week for myself as a Rafa fan, yeah, I must say.
What are the emotions, Kim, at the moment in the Kim household? Is it been excitement, tears? Has it been bittersweet? How have you been feeling?
I think, yeah, excitement mostly that he's back. And then obviously disappointment that he's picked up, you know, this kind of niggling muscle injury. But I think based on what he was saying, it's still quite positive and he's looking like longer term, which is good, I think. So we'll get on to all the ins and outs of it in a bit. But I think just having Rafa back on a tennis court again just was, yeah, fantastic. I'm sure many of our listeners will agree, even if they're not, you know, a massive fan. I think just having him back on the tour, a lot of people were very, very excited. But also Naomi Osaka back, Emma Raducanu back. So loads to chat through today with lots of comebacks.
I know. And it is a tour catch up. As usual, we're going to be catching up on all the tennis that has happened. We've got a path for the courts as well. As usual, we're going to be making some predictions, which I'm very interested to hear what Chris actually has not unveiled his predictions pre-recording. So I've got no idea.
I don't want you to steal them,
I'm
Joel.
A little bit nervous actually what you're gonna come up with for your Grand Slam predictions.
I haven't
year.
Said Sloane Stephens, I can promise you. I haven't gone too rogue and I haven't
well,
said
I've
Raducanu.
Said Coco Gauff just to warn you there.
I'd be surprised if you go for anyone who isn't currently world number one.
Well, I mean, one thing we do have to mention before we begin is of course our crowdfunder, because we are so very close to our £2,000 target. Absolutely fantastic amount of support that we've received. Massive thank you to everyone who has donated and shown their support. Any amount that you guys can give goes a really long way to us keeping our podcast going and keeping Tennis Weekly what it is and you know what it can be in the future. So massive thank you to everyone who has donated so far. Yeah, we've been blown away, haven't we guys, by the level of support.
Yeah, it's been incredible. And it's been an incredible to see the different response from people, and there's been some lovely messages there too. So thank you very much to everyone who's donated, however big or small, or anyone who's listened. It's just been great.
And if you still want to support us and donate to the crowdfund, it is still open. The link will be in the description and I'm going to read it aloud now. It is www.gofundme.com/tennis-weekly-2024. That's gofundme.com/tennis-weekly-2024. So yeah, if you can help us reach our £2,000 target, we would be bouncing off the walls, I think, if we can do that by the end of January. So if you can show your support, it would mean the world to us.
And we've been bouncing off the walls for another reason, Joel, haven't we? Because once again, we've been nominated for the Best Tennis and Racket Podcast at the Sports Podcast Awards. So this is something that we were very pleased to come runner-up in last year. And it's fantastic to be a finalist once again. Thankfully, I don't have a very, very long link I have to tell you about, but you can vote for us if you would like. That is in our description. And then you just have to click to vote Tennis Weekly, and then you just have to register. So very, very simple. The deadline is the 28th of January. And so we will be telling you about that again and reminding you in case you don't have time to pause now and do that. But yeah, great news there, guys.
Funny story, when we found out that we were runner-up last year, I was on my way to watching Elton John in London. Yeah, I'm hoping we can go one further this year.
Who will you see? You need to see someone as epic as Elton John.
I need to go see someone big. I know.
That was the farewell concert. You need maybe Cher or something, you know?
I was thinking about Busted.
Busted.
Not Mook Busted these days?
No, I think they've gone back to Busted.
Oh, they're pure Busted again, right. So,
or maybe Girls Aloud at the O2.
That would be good.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Robbie Williams, perhaps, as well. I think he's doing some gigs.
That'll be the good luck charm. But yeah, listeners, again, if you can help us and you want to show your support for the show, then please vote for us in the Sports Podcast Awards. It would mean a lot to us and we would love to go one better this year.
Yeah, great stuff. And guys, moving on to the tennis now, we have tons to catch up on. The first week of the new season, but also the off season, albeit a short one. Let's start with the off season before we get on with all of the action from Australia and elsewhere so far this year. What's been your highlight from the off season? It's been brief, but we've still had a lot of stuff happening.
We've still had a lot of tennis, Kim.
Lots of exhibitions going on. Joel, tell me and our listeners what your highlight from the off season has been.
I mean, of course, it was Jack Draper winning UTS Grand Final in London. But apart from that, as you said, there were lots of exhibitions on and there was the World Tennis League in Abu Dhabi. I didn't watch much of it because I needed a rest. However, I loved a clip of Elena Rybakina dancing to a 50 Cent concert. I think 50 Cent was paid a lot of money. Probably a lot more than 50 cents to play at the opening of the World Tennis League. And there's a little video of Rybakina dancing to In Da Club, which I very much enjoyed. I didn't have her down as a hip hop head, but yeah, she seemed to be loving it a lot.
Maybe 50 Cent is the concert you'll go to see then when you find out, hopefully, that we might have won the Sports Podcast Awards.
Maybe I'll invite Rybakina because, yeah, she seemed to be a big fan.
Yeah, I did not have her down as, yeah, like a hip hop kind of person. But I don't know what music I would have, you know, thought.
Classical,
yeah, perhaps. well, my highlight actually is slightly kind of musical as well, or audio based, I suppose, as well. I mean, my highlight was probably Annabelle Croft getting to the semi-finals of Strictly Come Dancing in the UK. She did very, very well. I was quite gutted that she didn't get into the final, but I think she made herself and her family proud with her performances. So go Annabelle. I'm kind of following her a lot on social media these days and she's doing the Strictly tour. So yeah, anyone who's into dance and tennis, go and see her on the tour around the UK.
Relentless gigs from us as recommendations, yeah, today.
Exactly. Also, I, for some laughs and out of curiosity, I went into our back catalogue to about 5.5 years ago to the origins of the podcast to listen to the very first episode, which was Joel going solo talking about British doubles players in Estoril and a stat from the Uganda Futures Tournament. So listeners, we have come a long way.
On a bench.
We don't give you stats from Uganda Futures Tournaments anymore, but we do give you a lot more. So
I think we should be bringing that back.
Maybe you could. We used to do school board stories, all of these things.
School board stories. We could repost that episode, and you could let us know if that's a format you'd like to bring back.
I wonder how many listeners we have who were there for that very first episode when it was solo, when it was kind of like talking. I think for
it was like tennis therapy. Maybe.
Yes, it was tennis therapy, and I was like, actually, I need a partner in crime, and Kim came on board.
I did indeed. So yeah, listeners, let us know if you remember those days, because I had a
days
great
to forget, I imagine.
Great fun going down memory lane, having a bit of a giggle at Joel in the early days. But also on the subject of podcasts, a certain Caroline Garcia has now set up her own podcast called Tennis Insider Club.
What?
Which I saw on social media. So I haven't listened to one yet. I don't know if she's recorded one, but there's a new podcast to the game.
She's no longer a friend.
She's an enemy.
Is she still part of a renaissance? I'm not sure.
Oh, she could be the number one podcast on the Apple ranking. That could be fulfilling the renaissance there, potentially.
Yes, maybe that's her long-term strategy to win the podcast game.
The exit game there.
I hope not. I
think we could have done without that competition from a very talented French player, especially in a year where a lot's happening for French tennis. But I cheated on this. This is from tennis from this season, but technically it is from 2023, because on the 31st of December, Dominic Thiem unfortunately was playing qualifiers, as he's kind of wont to do these days, and a deadly snake made it onto court. So this is obviously in Australia, so this is just par for the, well, this is just normal day for an Australian, really, seeing a deadly snake. But it was a 50 centimeter venomous snake identified as a deadly eastern brown snake that was spotted midway through his comeback victory over Australian James McCabe. So I was watching the video for this.
They were not
particularly panicked. They were kind of just flicking it around, and actually they flicked it into the stands and no one was running away. Apparently they can get much, much larger than that. So this was small fry for the Australian crowd. But still, I mean, does it get more strayer than that?
How would you react to seeing a snake in the local vicinity? Because I'm not going to lie, I would run a mile.
If I was a fan there, I would be like terrified. There's going to be snakes in the crowd and in the stands.
Is there a snake policy on the tickets?
Well, I've been to this tournament in Brisbane, and you know, I didn't even think about snakes at the tennis when I went. But if I went again, I'd be thinking twice.
What would you bring? Like something to protect yourself?
Snake detector.
A snake whacker.
Snake repellent.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that it's a deadly snake, it's a bit different to sort of like a, you know, bog standard grass snake like we get in the UK. This is, you know, quite a big, long, deadly snake. So bless the person who spotted it so they could remove it before it did any harm. Some eagle-eyed person spotting it. But yeah, I was shocked when I saw this news, and I thought, oh yeah, that's definitely one
for, it was made up almost
for the podcast to mention. It's almost like one of those April Fools kind of
bit of an inauspicious
style.
Start wasn't it in Brisbane, and for other reasons as well, wasn't it, Kim?
Yes, I mean, let's get on to the subject of Brisbane, because that has been, you know, the talk of the town, I suppose. Well, I hosted a 250 for the men, and for the ladies it was a
500,
so slightly higher sort of caliber of player for the women. But yeah, I mean, for the men's side we had Rafa making his comeback, and Gregor Dimitrov.
Wait, what do you mean Rafa's come back? No.
Yeah, did you not see, Chris?
No, I didn't see that. I haven't seen you one message from you on the WhatsApp, Kim.
No, no. I wasn't being like, oh, Rafa's back, I'm following the scores at 4 a.m. now. No, helpfully, he had all the night matches, I think, there, so it was sort of our morning. But yeah, he played three matches, had match points to win the third, but lost to Jordan Thompson in the quarterfinals. Then picked up an injury. After flying to Melbourne, he's had an MRI, and it's been revealed that due to a muscle tear, he will now go back to Spain to get some treatment and then prepare himself for the clay season rather than continuing to play best of five at the Australian Open. So sad for all the fans in Melbourne and for everyone obviously looking forward to him playing at the Australian Open. But I think, you know, he seems still quite positive. It's not in exactly the same place as where he had the hip surgery, and he always was focusing, I think, on probably the clay, really, in reality. So I think all is not lost, and we look forward to the clay and having him returning again to the tour.
What did you think, though, Kim, of the tennis you saw? How did you rate the comeback so far? And And what do you think he can do this year based on what you've seen?
Well, I did allow myself to, when he had match points against Jordan Thompson, I thought, oh, could Rafa win this tournament? Which was way more than I'd actually originally anticipated. I thought he might struggle against Dominic Thiem. But actually, I was, yeah, fairly impressed with what I did see from him in those early matches. But I think, you know, as that quarterfinal went on, you know, he had to go off court for some treatment. And, it, you know, you could sense that it's going to be about, I think, efficient tennis, isn't it? To kind of prolong what he does have left on the tennis circuit. So I think, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised because I did think, you know, even in the first match, you just never know how it's going to be, how it's going to go. So I think reasons to be somewhat cheerful, although obviously not ideal that in the third match he's picked up this muscle tear. So he'll be getting the best, you know, support and treatment. So we hope that that will do its magic and he'll be back. And yeah, I think just low expectations though, I think is the way to go. I was just pleased to see him back. I have a good friend out in Brisbane who was able to see him as well, so I was very pleased for them. And but yeah, I mean, aside from that, I thought also an interesting tournament with Grigor Dimitrov winning his first title since 2017. So a bit of a blast from the past as well, with Grigor defeating Holger Rune in the final.
Yeah, really surprising. I couldn't believe that the last time he won a title was the end of season finals. It's the longest anyone who's won the end of season finals has gone before winning another title. And it just shows that Paris result at the end of last year wasn't kind of a flash in the pan. He really has got himself back on track when it comes to his tennis. So for me, I think it was kind of very refreshing because so often you see him in these close matches or these close sets and he doesn't get it done. He's been a little bit of a choker, I'd say, on the tour. So it's great to see this result. He's really pushing back towards the top 10 and he does like playing Australia. So maybe there is a sort of a resurgence for him and he might actually be able to cause some trouble in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really high quality final between the pair of Rune and Dimitrov. I mean, Rune hit 35 winners, only 15 unforced errors, and he still came out with a loss because Dimitrov, he just seemed to be firing on all cylinders. And, you know, his single-handed backhand is utterly majestic in my book. And, you know, 27 winners, 8 unforced errors. He is playing some of the, you know, the best tennis I think I've seen in his career. And he's going to be a real interesting threat, I think, come, you know, the Australian Open. I don't think we were sort of expecting, you know, to talk about Grigor Dimitrov, you know, up in these realms of how far he could go in Australia. But, you know, he's been playing some very solid tennis over the last few months. And I think that's one of the, you know, it's almost one of the advantages, I think, of having a short off season is that if you are playing really well in those final few months of the season, there's not actually that long to wait to get back onto the court down under and
keep the momentum going.
Keep the momentum going, and I think that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, he was actually the second seed for this event, so it was a final between the top two seeds. But Grigor, you know, sailed through, with the exception of that sort of tough opening match against Andy Murray, where he did drop the first set to Murray, which, you know, in light of Grigor then going on to win the tournament, maybe doesn't reflect so badly on Andy Murray. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on what you saw from Murray, Joel.
I think there's a little bit of trepidation with Andy Murray going into this season. With every loss, I always just kind of think, like, is he going through his mind that, you know, the R word is retirement on the, you know, on the horizon? Because, you know, he's quite plainly said, you know, if he's not enjoying his tennis, then that is going to creep into his mind even more. And, you know, he had a very tough match against Dimitrov. You know, he's still unseeded, you know, with his ranking. And, you know, he's going to be out to getting these tough opponents in the first round. And although he started well taking that first set, he wasn't able to continue through. And although I think it was a promising performance, yeah, I think he'll be disappointed. He sort of ran out of steam in the end. And, yeah, it'll be it's interesting times, I think, for the Murray camp, because there's a bit of uncertainty. It sounds like, to me, like, hopefully he can stay fit, but with each loss, I'm always kind of like, oh, what's going on in his head? But I think the performances are still there.
It makes me think that maybe Wimbledon is the goal to get through to another Wimbledon. He did talk about whether this would be his last year on the tour. He's been quite open about that. But I mean, we had some real highs and epic matches last year in Australia, and he does love playing there. So again, we're hoping to get some more great results for him. But it's going to be tough. It's always going to be tough because you can see that anyone can kind of elevate their game. Like Dimitrov can really rise up. And when you're a player who's probably towards the end of his career in many respects, picking up those wins is few and far between. So I really hope this year he gets a breakthrough at a slam, like a really good run and a decent draw, because he's obviously really competitive still because Dimitrov went and won the title. So he just needs that draw to open up for him, I think.
Yeah, and I also enjoyed seeing Murray and Rafa on a practice court as well. So perhaps we'll see them at a Grand Slam actually playing each other again. We will see. But let's look at the women's event as well out in Brisbane. We had Elena Rybakina winning that one. Pretty much very one-sided in the final against Aryna Sabalenka. So that, again, they were the top two seeds getting to the women's event. But Rybakina, second seed, kind of only for the loss of three games coming up against Sabalenka. I was not expecting that scoreline. They've had quite close matches, haven't they, previously?
I mean, she just steamrolled the whole competition.
Yeah, but, you know, AO final last year was these two, close match. Is this setting the tone for Rybakina at the AO, do we think?
I think you've got to think her and Iga are the favourites with this sort of a performance. I mean, she made one unforced error in that first set. I mean, this is one of those days. I think she had one of them against Raducanu in the same tournament a few years ago where she absolutely blitzed Raducanu, like one in love. And when she's on, her game is just unplayable. And she definitely demonstrated that. I mean, she just lost 15 games this whole week. And it's only the third player since 2000 to drop three games against a WTA top three player in a WTA final. And the only other players who've done it are Serena Williams and Flavia Panetta, believe it or not. So this is as good as it gets from a form perspective. And you just hope you don't peak too soon. But it is very promising going into a slam.
I mean, her serving stats in the final were fantastic. And I actually was really impressed with her touch at the net. Because I think I just sort of think about Rybakina from the back of the court, you know, blasting balls and hitting winners. But actually, when she came forward, she's pretty competent at the front of the court as well. And that was what I was impressed with against Sabalenka, when you might not necessarily want to get into those rallies and you want to close off the point earlier. She has the capacity to do that. That was what I was very impressed by. I mean, Sabalenka, I mean, she is obviously the Australian Open defending champion. I would say this is more of a blip. You know, she had a good start. She's had a very good start to the season. But I think Rybakina has certainly fired some warning shots to the rest of the competition.
Well, I was going to say this is something that her coach has actually been working on a lot with her, Stefano Vukov, because his big part of what she does is trying to take the ball early on return and follow it, the momentum in. And I think that's something that has really been adding to her game. And you've got to think, you know, when it comes around to the grass court season, if you can land a higher serve percentage, which is kind of the thing she struggles with, the first serve percentage, and you could back it up with a volley, I mean, it's almost sort of like the indestructible grass court game at work. So it's going to be interesting, because it will also help her when it comes to some of these long matches and some of the struggles she's talked about of the long season, some difficult scheduling. If you can keep the point short, it's going to set you up for a much healthier year potentially.
I mean, it's very exciting, I think, and just even in the first week, I mean, we've got Rybakina in the final. Świątek was in the final with Poland on, you know, in the United Cup. Sabalenka in the final. Coco Gauff in the final.
It was
Auckland.
One and two in every tournament this week.
Yeah. And if you're talking about a big four potentially for the year, it's very exciting, I think, already that it seems that they're all hitting the ground running.
Yeah, that it does bode well for a fantastic opening slam of the season as well, hopefully. I was thinking perhaps we could have some young, you know, upstarts in Linda Noskova and Mira Andreeva. They played in the quarterfinals with Noskova actually coming through and then subsequently losing to Rybakina. I think those two are definitely ones to watch for this opening slam. And obviously, Joel, your recent interview with Matt from The Athletic, he was very much tipping Andreeva for a slam final this year.
Well, what about the elephant in the room that we've forgotten? This is not about size or anything like that. It's about Naomi Osaka's back. I mean, I feel like we did a big Nadal moment, but Naomi is back.
There's just loads of comebacks in this.
Too many to keep track of.
There's too much to keep track of, but I certainly took notice of this comeback. I think as much as some of the young guns are putting some good results together, I think we've got some of the old school coming back, obviously Kerber in the United Cup that we'll talk about, but Naomi Osaka came back and she really did hit the ground running. I thought it was kind of unbelievable, that match against Pliskova. 40 winners, 12 unforced errors.
Is that Pliskova just having an incredible day on the tennis mm-hmm. court, or is that, and we're not going to see that for, you know, the next 2 months or so, or is that her again announcing, like, actually I've got some serious game here that I'm bringing to Melbourne?
There's so much depth, right, in the field. I really believe that. And for that match, I mean, Naomi should have taken it. It's a bit like the Rafa match where he should have taken that. She had only took 2 of 12 break points, whereas Pliskova took 2 of 2. 14 aces, 2 double faults for Osaka. I mean, the numbers are unbelievable, but it's just that match play of getting over the line in those key moments and taking those chances, which you can't practice on a practice court. So I would say, again, if we're looking at kind of a big four, I think we're going to have to make it bigger, Joel. Are we having a big eight, a big seven?
Where do you put Naomi Osaka in that category? Because, you know, she came here, I feel like she's coming here and she's spoken about in press how, you know, she's coming with no expectations, she's going very relaxed on the court, there's no pressure. Is that when Naomi Osaka is her most dangerous?
You don't want to say nervous, do you, Kim?
Yeah, I think, I mean, when she stepped on court, won that first match against Korpach, I thought, could I predict her to win the AO? I mean, ooh, strange things have happened. Could she be at that levels that quick? You know, can she compete, though, with Świątek, Rybakina, who clearly seemed to be in good form? I'm not sure, but I certainly think she's got her in her. I mean, she's won the title twice before. Who knows? I mean, but yeah, what a great match against Pliskova in the third round here.
Ostapenko Azarenka as well, I thought was a fantastic match. Yeah. I saw already Ostapenko hitting the ground running with dialogue with the umpire already this season. Some unsavory words there, but yeah, there just seems to be a lot of players on the women's side who've just hit the ground running, and it's just making it very, very enticing, I think, with the first Grand Slam just around the corner.
Yes, and more of that to come later. But let's look at the United Cup, because like you said, we had Kerber back in action playing for Germany.
What a match against Aya Tomjanovic of Australia in the semi-final.
She won one match.
Beautiful.
And it was in the semi-final.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
But Germany have won the United Cup. Much to Alexander Zverev saving 2 match points in his singles tie, which became a bit of an epic against Hubert Hurkacz in the final. So Germany against Poland, Zverev coming through to beat Hurkacz, and then yeah, them coming through in the doubles, Zverev with Laura Siegmund beating Świątek and Hurkacz in the doubles, and a super tiebreak to get their United Cup win. Świątek obviously beating Kerber in the women's singles as well in the final. So yeah, what did you make of, I mean, did we pick Germany? I think we picked Poland prior, hadn't we? We said that's a really strong team with Świątek and Hurkacz, but had we picked Germany prior to this?
I don't think so. I think I maybe said something about Australia potentially, or but Norway did well. I was going to say we shouldn't talk about
didn't
that.
They turned up with like 3 people, didn't they? I think they were the only
team.
Yeah,
the least number of people made it to the semis, but I mean, I don't know how that happened, because I mean, Casper's the only player ranked inside the top 500, but loved that as a result. But I mean, in terms of this being an upset, obviously, I think they were the number 1 and 2 seeds again from a country perspective. And it's just a miracle that, you know, Zverev was able to stand on the court based on the week that he'd had. And you just hope that, you know, for a player that they will still be able to play to the best of their ability, because he has had all those injury issues coming back. But I mean, fighting fit, going to bed probably at 3 a.m. and getting up to play twice the next day, having played twice the day before. It's incredible.
I mean, fair play to him, because he played the mixed doubles as well as the singles. And, you know, to have that match he had against Hurkacz and then basically go up and do it again for the mixed doubles.
Yeah, the Terminator, isn't he?
Yeah, I was impressed with just how, I think, committed he was, you know, for the cause. And he was certainly, I think, one of the reasons that Germany were able to pull out of the bag. I would say also Laura Siegmund, great doubles player. I mean, she was also, I think, one of the reasons that Germany ultimately triumphed.
Would have stood the test on the doubles court.
Well, they went to the deciding mixed doubles three ties in a row. So they really, you know, did kind of scrape their way through. They also, you know, actually only came second in their group and went through based on the percentage of games that they'd won. So, yeah, Germany kind of getting the job done in the hardest possible way, it seemed. But, you know, that's how sport goes, isn't it? And fair play to them.
I mean, what do you think of the United Cup as a format? I mean, as a, let's be honest, spiritual successor to the Hopman Cup when it was in Australia, because, you know, it had a few teething problems last year. I mean, there were a couple, I guess, this year with some late finishes, but it seems to me that this year they had a fantastic tournament. Big players played it. We haven't even spoken about Novak Djokovic yet. We had some thrilling entertainment, and it put mixed doubles in the spotlight as well, with it being, you know, the final decider in quite a few of the ties.
Yeah, I think it is great fun when you get to those deciders. And I think having so many great contests did lead it to being really entertaining, really well watched. And I think a lot of people were able to watch it, which is great because, you know, this is a great platform for men's and women's tennis where people are getting paid sort of the same amount in this situation and they're working very much as a team. So I think there's a lot to like about it. And some of the issues that we had last year, you know, where it got very confusing with three locations and four semi-finalists and the groups. I mean, we still got some very odd ones where pretty much, I think, two of the three groups were three all and
it
went
was,
down to
it
percentages.
It was very calculator heavy, wasn't it? I mean, GB finished last.
Well, they did great. They did one, lost one, and that was very confusing. So I think the nature of the three teams in a group is tricky. It's almost better that it would be kind of a knockout potentially, but I'm not sure exactly how that would work, because then it would only be in one location. But I mean, it attracted the talent. It had some great matches and the people got really excited about it. And there was some home attention as well. Alex de Minaur did something pretty epic.
He's into the top 10. He's into the top 10.
And which one's bigger, beating Djokovic?
Or top 10? I thought that was the epic thing.
He went up
a
place in the ranking.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I think he'd take the win over Djokovic,
to
be fair.
You can tell your grandkids that, can't you? You can dine out of that for a while.
Yeah, I mean, he defeated Djokovic in straight sets, but Djokovic seemed to be struggling with a wrist injury. Are we worried about his wrist going into the AO? Do we think there's a danger it will stop him defending his title?
Oh, it's tough. You can never. We know we've been doing this podcast for so long. We know you can never count
out. Your predictions
out
don't get
Novak
better
Djokovic.
Though, Joel, if you're doing it so long. But you do count him out, I reckon.
Yeah.
No, surely not.
He will be thankful, I think, that there is time now, until Melbourne. But yeah, it obviously wasn't great. It's a bit of a fly in the ointment. I don't know how bad it is, but it seems to be an issue that he was visibly struggling against de Minaur. I think de Minaur played great, but it's hard to... I'm still taking it with a bit of pinch of salt from the Novak Djokovic side.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've as you said, we've seen this many times before and he's come back stronger than ever. So let's see where we are at in a few weeks. But yeah, Alex de Minaur, I think the star of the United Cup, despite Australia not not actually winning the event, he got his third consecutive top 10 victory, beating Djokovic, entering the top 10, doing it on home soil as well. I think like what we saw from him at the Davis Cup as well, you know, I know he was obviously disappointed to lose in that final, but I think maybe that has sort of brought him, you know, really good energy coming into the start of this year. So I'll be intrigued to see if that's a factor in that. But yeah, I think, yeah, it's been a better United Cup, and progress is what we want. I think, you know, compared to this time last year, I enjoyed this rendition more.
I did enjoy also Iga Świątek trading forehands with Sasha Zverev in the mixed doubles. Like it was just very easy, and she, you know, she's just trading blows. It was so, yeah. I mean, she's also, I think, had a very, very good start. I mean, she didn't lose any of her singles matches. She got the time on court that she needed. She was blasting players away at times, and again, although she's not in a traditional kind of tournament, but she's playing in a team set up for Poland, she still showed a level of tennis that makes me think, oh, is she the player to beat come the Australian Open?
Yeah, I think 16 match win streak at the moment obviously
second longest of our career, I think,
to last season as well. And if it wasn't for Hubert Hurkacz not getting those match points, then Poland would have walked away with a United Cup as well. There's been so much tennis in the past week. We also had a couple of 250s. We had the ASB Classic in Auckland, out in New Zealand, where we had Coco Gauff, the top seed, beating the second seed, Alina Svitolina, from a set
here.
Down. There's definitely, top two seeds doing it in all the tournaments this past week. But yeah, Coco Gauff coming from a set down to get past Alina Svitolina, 6-7, 6-3, 6-3. She's actually defended this title. It's the first time she's defended one of her titles. So it's another kind of little milestone you can tick off for Coco Gauff's, still very young career. Chris, what did you make of Gauff's week in Auckland?
I was hugely impressed with this because starting a new season, there's a lot of expectation again, especially post US Open triumph. And the way that she handles these situations is so different. Like, she doesn't get too stressed and the forehand doesn't break down in the same way. I mean, she was hugely competitive in that first set and she was only making 46% of first serves. She rectified it and finished the match with 65%, which is really impressive after kind of coming from behind and really having to improve. So, and she almost won that first set. So I think it's very impressive. I think Svitolina's playing some fantastic tennis. And I think it's this sort of problem solving that is something that she wasn't necessarily able to do in the first half of last season, despite winning this title. That was one of the big sort of positive points of the first half of the year for her. So I think it's setting herself up to be a real threat. As Joel said, it's great to see the top women's players playing like top women's players, which is great. And so much great tennis on show this week.
I mean, it's outrageous that Coco Gauff is 19 and she's got 7 WTA singles titles. I think she's got 8 WTA doubles titles as well. It's just obscene numbers. And to defend her title, that is not, regardless of what level it is, that is not something that happens that often. So to do that in your first tournament out of 2024, very, very well done.
It's 4 titles in the last 6 months, isn't it? It's Washington.
Crazy.
Cincinnati, was it? And then the US Open. And then now in Auckland. So, I mean, I'll be really interested to see what she's like on clay this year as well, because it is her favourite surface, apparently. So,
I mean, great stat. She's only ever lost one WTA final. And when she's been the top seed at an event, she's never lost. So just keep seeding her one and she'll continue winning.
But and yeah, then Joel will predict her to win everything.
Yeah, she very much picked up where she left off. And positive for Alina Svitolina as well. She had some good wins during the week, including one over Emma Raducanu, who was back in action.
Emma,
so Svitolina
Raducanu
looking good as well going into AO.
Bringing out all
Raducanu,
the names.
I know, Raducanu.
Are we going to talk about Raducanu and the coach, or are we actually going to be able to talk about Raducanu and her tennis on the court?
Well, she has
tennis.
She has confirmed her coach for Australia, I believe. I believe that she has gone back to a previous coach. But, I mean, the tennis from Raducanu was pretty good overall, I'd say. I was very impressed with her numbers in that Svitolina match. And Svitolina actually made the comparison with playing against Iga Swiatek at Wimbledon in terms of the level that was played and the sort of match where it was being won through winners. So, I mean, that's a huge compliment because Svitolina's played against a lot of very good players. She's a very experienced competitor. And, you know, to be playing that sort of tennis on your comeback week, we have to think it's very positive. There was some strapping though, guys. So I'm a bit concerned. She is due to play tomorrow. Was going to be against Osaka in an exhibition. Osaka's actually withdrawn, not
I thought
Raducanu.
It was Raducanu was going to withdraw, yes.
Same. And now Vekic is playing instead. But will she be fit? Will she be able to keep up the fitness? That is the big question still.
Yeah, it's always going to be the question, isn't it? I think it's tough. But it was, promising early signs. I think she just ran out of steam, against Svitolina in that second round. But I was pleasantly surprised with the level, that Raducanu's brought, given, I'd say, not just one injury, but, I mean, having surgery on
three
both
operations.
Wrists. Three operations, yeah. It's, to think that she can come back like this, playing this tennis, I think, for me, it's like she can only go, I think, up from here. She's starting at rock bottom, given, her ranking. And, we're seeing she's getting wild cards already. I think today I saw she got wild card into Dubai in February. And I think with those opportunities, I'm just hoping that she can deliver because, you know, she's been off the tour for so long. I think she'll want to feel like she's got a point to prove and show everyone that what I think a lot of people might think is that that US Open, that run to the US Open title, she wants to prove that it's not a fluke. I'm here to stay. And I think this is the season she will want to showcase that.
And that's what's so nice about seeing Raducanu and Osaka come back, because they are such big earners that they don't have to do this. They're doing this because they want to. And I think that's something that's very different about watching them play, is that they're doing it for, one, the love of the game, but also because for Osaka, it's making her daughter proud. And for Raducanu, it's very much, she's got unfinished business on the court. So it makes them very, very dangerous, I think. And it's going to make for a fantastic year of stories on the tennis court.
I will have to ask you, we've had a lot of comebacks this week. Which comeback were you most impressed with?
This is tricky. I thought I thought Naomi would be very good.
Raducanu, is it Angie Kerber? It's Angie Kerber, isn't it?
Getting bageled in the final. No, I would say Rafa, and that's what's so gutting about it for me, because he surprised a lot of people with how comfortably he came through his first two matches. And I really thought we would see him at the AO. But it's just such a shame. So I think he was the biggest surprise package for me, and I was very, very impressed.
Yeah, I can't not say Rafa either. No offence, though, to the others, because I think they all did fantastic. And I think...
Not Marin Cilic, I'd say. Missed 9 match points. That's the only thing I would say, Kim. We can't... We'll say Rafa, and he gets a special mention for the worst comeback.
Yeah. Sorry, Marin.
good effort.
Moving on to the Hong Kong Open, which was a 250 out in Hong Kong. Andre Rublev won this one against Emil Roussevori in the final. But yeah, this is where Marin Cilic lost his many match points against Jan Lennard Struff in his opener. But yeah, Andre Rublev getting the job done, 6-4, 6-4 against Roussevori. This is his 15th title now, his 10th on this surface. Very comfortable victory, racking up another 250. I mean, Rublev, you know, we saw him at the UTS event. We saw him get very angry at the UTS event. I hope he was a bit calmer this week in Hong Kong. Joel, any thoughts on Rublev's week?
I feel like it wasn't pretty at times. You know, you had a few tricky three-set victories, but I didn't feel like we learned a lot. You know, from Rublev winning a 250. I think, you know, in this sort of draw, yes, he can be champion and it wouldn't surprise you. I think there's bigger and better things to come from him from this season. And yeah, there'll be bigger fish to fry hopefully later in the year for him. But this is a good start. And, you know, away, I guess, from the noise of what's going on in Australia, it's nice to get a title under your belt, give you that confidence. I mean, I feel like him, more than anyone else, hasn't had an off season at all. I feel like all I've just seen him do is play exhibition events and go from one tournament to the other. So I just hope he doesn't kind of burn out at some point. But it seems to be that he's riding a wave of momentum at the moment when he steps onto the tennis court. And yeah, he'll hope that that confidence can take him to new places, particularly when it comes to Grand Slams, because that for him is going to be the objectives this season, because we know we can do this. We know that he can do this, you know, at a 250 level. He did it last year in the Masters as well. He's got bigger things to come.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, you do sort of think, is he inevitably going to burn out at the quarterfinals of a slam, where, you know, he really needs to surpass that stage this year. That will be his big goal. And it's all very well racking up these 250s, but does that, how does that tie into achieving that slam breakthrough? Another note, I know I saw Liam Brody was in the draw here.
Nice to see him qualify though. Yeah,
but he is out of the AO. He's picked up an injury, is going to head back home to the UK, so he's withdrawn from Aussie Open qualifying, sadly. But yeah, I think that brings us to a close for the first half of today's episode. Loads of tennis to catch up on, but there's loads still to come in the second half, where we'll be discussing Roger Nova's Australian Open wildcard snub, whether tennis balls are causing too many player injuries, and we'll also be making some amazing predictions for the year ahead. So do not go anywhere.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast. And now we're going to move on to, very excitingly, the first of the season, the very first par for the courts with Joel. 2024, it's opening with a bang. First par for the courts. What have you got for us, Joel?
Was this in the podcast from 5 years ago, Kim? Was it par for the courts back then or what was it? Joel testing Joel. He won every round.
What
he won.
Did we do? Yes. Question, and yeah. I would win. Yes.
Every time.
I can't remember. What did we start with? Was it Mysterious Player? I forget.
Well, that was our very first game.
That was our
yeah.
very first
I'm
game,
sure
wasn't
it? Was, yeah.
Well, it is a par for the courts, back and forth for both of you. It's right. A clean slate this season, Kim. I hope you'll be relieved, I feel, to know.
I've got a chance, have
You've
I?
You've got a chance.
No. I think we should remember everything that's happened before. Kim, don't forget.
I am actually worried that you will get 100% on this par for the courts I've got for you, but we shall see. I do have...
Have you made it that easy, Joel?
I do have a tiebreaker... question in case that does happen, but here is the category for you. So 2023 has ended and Sportico announced their highest paid women athletes of 2023, and in the top 15, 9 of them were tennis players. And I would like you to name me the 9 tennis players that were in the top 15 highest earning sports women of 2023. And I know what you're going to ask me. Yes, it includes salary stroke winnings as well as endorsements.
Okay. Ooh. That was my number one question. Yeah. Right.
Who's
okay.
going first?
There you go. There are 9 correct answers here. And who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Why not?
Oh, that's the confidence I like to hear, Kim. Okay.
So if it includes endorsements, there are some players that haven't played at all, really, but would probably still be on this list based on endorsements, I think, and the sort of market that they appeal to, especially. So, Naomi Osaka?
Naomi Osaka is a correct answer. Yes, you've got par for the courts 2024 off to a good start.
Phew.
Chris, it's over to you.
I did see a headline, but I think it was Forbes maybe, so I'm not sure if it's the same list, but I was pretty sure there was some outrage because, you know, Jack Draper got a big paycheck from UTS, but Emma Raducanu brought in the serious bank without really having to hit a tennis ball. So I'll say Emma Raducanu.
Correct, yes. Emma Raducanu is on the list. Kim, back to you.
Does it have to be active players or can they be retired? Sorry, that's another question.
They're all active players.
Okay, fair enough.
Who are you going to go for? Serena?
Serena, yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Or Sharapova, I suppose, even in theory, maybe. surely this person still would be on this list. Iga Swiatek.
Correct. Yes, Iga Swiatek is on the list.
It's probably got to be
3.
The most marketable teenager in tennis. It's got to be Coco Gauff.
That is a correct answer. Yes, Coco Gauff is on the list. And perhaps surprisingly, she is number 1. She is above Iga Swiatek, who's at number 2.
The US Open prize money is probably bigger than Roland Garros. Maybe that's edged it for her.
Arina Sabalenka?
Correct. Yes, Arina Sabalenka is on the list. So you've got the top five of the tennis players.
So it's only getting harder from here then.
Yes, there's four left.
I'm going to go just on, you know, the interest that Pegula gets from, you know, the family wealth alone would probably put her in the list. But I think she earns her money on the court as well. So I say Jessie Pegula.
Jessica Pegula is a correct answer. Yes, on the list.
I'd quite like you to get this wrong, Kim, now. I don't have anyone else.
Well, I'm thinking this player did, you know, do quite well, but because of the geographical region, especially that they're from, I assume there would be a lot of sponsorships in a certain area. I might not see them, but she would get stuff over there. So Ons Jabeur
is a correct answer. She just got on the list at number 15.
Ooh.
So you well are done. Correct. Kim is in the lead. There is big pressure here on Chris. There are two correct answers left. I'm slightly nervous you're going to get both of them, but let's see.
I'm going to go for, based on what we've said previously, pretty much the whole of the top five are there. I don't think we've said Rybakina. So I would say Rybakina.
Elena Rybakina is a right answer. So that is four apiece.
One answer there between us.
There is one answer left. So we're going to go back and forth until we get this right answer.
Okay.
Just say Serena. Go on, Kim.
No, she's not an active player. I'm not allowed to.
And actually, just... I'm going to give you, you're going to get three goes at this each before I give you the tie break. If you've got three goes each, if you both don't get it, you get the tie break to settle it.
But what if Kim gets it and I don't get a chance to go?
Oh, that's tricky.
That's tricky. We'll deal with it when we get there.
How about, because this person won a slam, Marketa Vondrousova? Would that be sufficient?
Well, that's a good guess.
Because she might not have that much
She got a,
sponsorship.
A new clothing sponsorship deal.
That is incorrect. It's not Marketa Vondrousova.
Damn.
So Chris, an answer
for,
to win.
Is this
win.
For the win? Oh, this is not very easy, is it? If I had to say, the only name I can think of is someone who did very well, who came up at the same time as Raducanu, and I'd go for Lena Fernandez because I think that she still has quite a lot of future earnings ahead of her, and she has some big deals, I think. But I don't think she made enough probably to make the list, but that's what I'd say that.
That is a correct answer. Oh, you have won.
Whoa.
It's the first par for the courts. Back and forth of the season.
What
Leila
number was she then?
Fernandez was number 13 on the list. Yeah, perhaps the most surprising name, I would say, but yes. Coco Gauff, Iga Świątek, Emma Raducanu, Naomi Osaka, Arina Sabalenka, Elena Rybakina, Jessie Pegula, Leila Fernandez, and at number 15, Ons Jabeur.
Oh, well, well, well.
There you go.
Wow. I mean, endorsements certainly make up a lot of that based on that list.
Yes, that was very, very, that was a very tight one. Very, very close.
Well done, Chris. No, that's full credit to you. I would never have said Fernandez, so fab answer there. Listeners, let us know how you got on with that. Kickstarting the season off with a par for the courts. Thanks, Joel, for devising it. And let's dip into our mailbag now because we've got a question from Jess on email who asked us, hi, Tennis Weekly, with the new season kicking off, I would love to know your predictions for Grand Slam champions, the Olympics, and your year-end world number one on both the ATP and WTA tours. So thanks very much, Jess. It's time we put our thinking caps on and crystal
Coco
balls.
Coco Gauff for everything.
Coco Gauff for everything, perhaps. Perhaps that, you know, well, why not? So let's have a stab at who we think is going to win the big bucks this year on the court.
Okay.
Let's go tournament by tournament. I'd completely forgotten the Olympics were happening this year, so we'll throw them in there as well. Let's start with the men, and I think I'm just going to say the tournament.
Is it on clay, by the way? Is the Olympics on clay? I've assumed it is.
Yes, Paris Olympics. Roland Garros.
Right.
Fantastic.
Uh-huh. Yes. Which makes a nice change because it's been hardcore since forever, it seems. So I'll say a tournament and then we're just going to go round in turn.
You say a tournament and we'll say Djokovic.
Basically. Right. Australian Open.
Novak Djokovic.
I've gone for Jannik Sinner.
Oh. Well, with Djokovic's wrist, that could be likely. I've gone for Novak Djokovic, though. I can't bet against him. He's won it, what, 10 times? So
I know what you won't have gone for the French Open. You never say Nadal in case you jinx it.
Yeah, so French Open, I've gone for Novak Djokovic again.
I've gone Rafa. Ooh. I'm regretting that already, but I'm going Rafa.
I went for Djokovic because he loves, having not won the Australian Open, he loves a revenge win, you know?
Oh, you've really mapped it out then.
I've gone through the emotional struggle they're going through throughout the year.
Wimbledon, Joel?
Djokovic. It can't be anyone else.
Ooh, Alcaraz is going to defend that title. I'm really? Positive. Yeah.
Ooh. I've gone Djokovic. I think he's claiming, he's going to kiss the grass.
Alcaraz defending Wimbledon title. Oh, I'm not sure about that, but okay.
I'm not sure about any of these, Joel, but here we are.
US Open, Chris?
I did go for Djokovic again for this one. I went for 50% of the slams to him.
Okay. I was tempted to go 100%, but I've gone for Jannik Sinner for the US. Joel?
I've also gone Jannik Sinner. The US Open.
Is he
particularly
great on those courts, though?
Look, particularly after the Olympics, there's going to be some random freak result. And I think it's always time for a new Grand Slam champion. That's why I'm going Jannik Sinner.
I should have put Jack Draper or something. I shouldn't have, but a really rogue one.
Ben Shelton?
I would love to
Ben
see
Shelton?
That.
Me too. Oh, Ben Shelton could do it. But we've gone quite safe, haven't we? No one's gone outside of, is it four names, including Nadal?
Mm.
And for the Olympics, Joel?
I've got Carlos Alcaraz winning the Olympics. I think best of three format will help him there.
Chris?
Well, I mean, I've gone for Adrian Mannarino on French home soil.
Wow.
Heading into the top 20 for the first time in his career this week. No, I didn't do that. I went for Jannik Sinner on the back of his Davis Cup performance. I think he will do very well playing for his country again.
Nice. I've gone for Sasha Zverev.
Defending his Olympic title.
Recency bias as well, yeah, with the United Cup, but yeah, okay. I've gone for Zverev, so
didn't see that one coming, Kim.
Heavens above. And the year end number one, Joel?
Djokovic.
Yeah, I've also gone Djokovic. Chris?
Mathematically we have to, otherwise we're very bad at understanding the ranking points.
Does anyone really understand the ranking points?
No.
A clean sweep for Djokovic there. Okay, so on to the women. I think we've got fairly similar predictions for the men, but I feel like there could be maybe some more rogue entities in the women. Right, Australian Open. Joel, who's winning?
Wozniacki. No. Coco Gauff, sorry. Coco Gauff.
And Chris?
Oh, that is a good prediction, Joel. I was tossing up between Coco Gauff, but I went for Svitolina. I think she's going to bring
what?
It home.
What?
Yeah,
what?
I do. I was really, really impressed with her this week.
Yeah, she was good. She's definitely got... I'd love to see it. That would be a great story.
What a story, yeah.
I've gone a bit boring, I suppose, and I think the win streak's going to carry on and it's going to be Iga Świątek getting her first AO.
So no one thinks Sabalenka
or Rybakina. Interesting.
Well...
Have any of us gone for them? No, I don't think so for this one.
No. French Open? Joel?
Do we need to do this?
Świątek.
Okay, yeah.
Okay,
clean
move
sweep.
Move on.
We don't know what Havlukova is doing.
I've gone Sabalenka.
Oh, really?
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
I was liking the look of Rybakina's volleys, so I'm going to go for Rybakina to pick up another one.
I've gone for Coco Gauff to do it on the grass.
So no one was brave enough to say on Zyabor.
No, third time lucky, maybe.
It's tricky, isn't it?
Oh, maybe she'll prove us wrong. US Open, Joel.
I'm not sure about this one. I've said Iga Świątek mainly because of her fitness and how attritional I think this season is going to be, but I'm not really that confident on that. But I'm going to say Świątek.
I've gone Arina Sabalenka because I do think she's going to get a slam this year. And if it's not AO, I think it would be the US. What about you, Chris?
I've gone for returning Grand Slam champion.
Serena Williams. Oh, no, Emma Raducanu.
I was going to do Serena Williams, but I didn't. I did Osaka. I went for Osaka.
Osaka, ooh, nice.
Okay.
I think she might need a bit of time just to get herself back into top tier contention.
Mm-hmm. Olympics then, Joel?
I've gone Świątek. I think she's going to do the Parisian double at Roland Garros.
Yeah, I've put Osaka, and then I realised it's the clay. So yeah.
She said it's a big focus for her, but I'm not sure if it's the right one.
I'm going to stick with it. I'm just going to go out there. But I suppose, I feel like it could... I do think it's going to be someone that's perhaps not Świątek. I think we need to look slightly outside the box for the Olympics.
Kim,
but
it's like you've just set me up perfectly, because I've gone for the woman who beat Osaka at the last Olympics. I've gone for silver medalist Markéta Vondrousova.
Oh, nice. Yeah, well, always former French well Open finalist. So exactly. She likes the clay. And year-end number one, are we all thinking the same here, perhaps? No, Chris isn't. I'm going for Świątek. I think consistency is key.
Świątek.
I've gone for Rybakina.
Rybakina? Wow. But she's not winning one of your slams.
She won Wimbledon.
She won Wimbledon for you. She will win Wimbledon.
She won it without dropping a set. That's also something I wrote here.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I like the detail there. So, yeah, Jess, we've done predictions. Listeners, what do you think of
those? Let's hope that wasn't Jesse Pegula and we haven't predicted her to do anything.
Soz JPEG. Thanks so much for sending in your question to the mailbag. Keep them coming. We love to see what you guys want to know and what you're thinking of. So please do keep asking us. And I think we'll probably publish these predictions on our socials at some point so everyone can see them as well. But let's have a quick look at some of the talking points from the last week as well. There's been a news article on tennis balls and specifically that the differences of in the balls across the season and how this results in a lot of injuries for players. There's a lot of change from one tournament to the next of the different types of balls that are used, and that essentially a lot of players have come out to say that that does not help physically because they're switching to and from different balls, different weights, different ways that they play. So a lot of players have come out, Kyrgios being one of them, to suggest that, you know, perhaps there's more consistency with the types of tennis balls. Joel, what do you make of this? Are you in agreement? Have you, you know, is this something you've experienced in your playing days?
I've not experienced it from my playing days, but I mean, watching it as a fan over the last year or so and seeing how the players comment, this is not a new issue. It's a conversation, I think, that's just been going over the last, particularly over the last 18 months or so. And, you know, I feel like one by one we're seeing more and more players add themselves to the conversation and basically say, you know, the chopping and changing of tennis balls throughout the year from tournament to tournament, it's just not good for the body and it's leading to these problems. And although it might not be a solution or a problem that tournament organizers want to hear, who have their partnerships and relationships with, you know, their own ball manufacturers, I think it's something that needs to be addressed. And I think that whoever it is, I would assume the ITF or the rule makers of tennis, someone needs to come in and give more guidance or be more strict in terms of, you know, what is going on with the tennis balls and how, you know, how they are used. Because at the moment, I think, you know, there are quality of balls that gets criticized. And if they are, you know, fluffing up earlier or they're not a good tennis ball, and they're slow or they lead to longer matches, like, you know, we saw in Brisbane, I think that from a tournament organizer point of view, that might mean that, yes, it's more exciting because the match is longer, but you're putting players' health at risk and you could ultimately lead to a situation like Rafa, you know, tweaking his hip and being out of the first Grand Slam of the year. So I think it's an issue that needs to be looked at. I get that it's not an easy one to fix, but I think the rule makers like the ITF need to come in and maybe even minimize, be like, right, on this surface you got three tennis balls you can choose from, and maybe that's a solution. It might not be to everyone's liking, but it certainly I think would help the players, you know, manage their workloads a bit more and make sure that their bodies aren't on the line for reasons that are out of their control.
And Chris, what do you think?
I mean, if you explain it to somebody, they'd think you were mad, you know, saying all these different types of balls that people play with and them being significantly different. So it doesn't seem like it makes sense for players. It doesn't seem like it makes sense in terms of getting to watch the best people play from a fan perspective either. So, I mean, Nadal had some pretty strong words saying that the ball was far too big by the end of the first set that he was playing, and it wasn't playing in the proper way. So he said it was dead until they had a change of balls, new balls in. So I think if Nadal's saying that, I think there really is something fundamentally wrong with the ball that they're playing with in Australia, because I don't think that lends itself to better matches or happier players. So it would be good, as you say, there is a selection of balls for the surfaces, and then all the warm-up tournaments play with them, but they are as consistent as possible and appropriate for the surface. And I think that the US Open's done that pretty well. I think the French has just about got it right. But when you go from one hard court location to another, I mean, we shouldn't be changing the ball completely.
Yeah. No, I agree with you both as well. I think it's definitely some extremely valid points, and it'll be interesting to see if anything, you know, comes of this, and, you know, to tackle this and to help the players out a bit. And let's look now at the subject of wildcards for the Australian Open. Bit of controversy here. Aryna Rodionova, who is Australia's top-ranked women's player, has been snubbed in getting a wild card. She has had a pretty good run of form sort of late last season into this year. She's won more matches than any other Australian women's player, yet has not been given an Australian Open wild card. The final wild card went instead to Daria Saville. Obviously, the host of Aussie players have received wild cards from Tennis Australia. Also, Caroline Wozniacki, Elise Cornet getting wild cards on the women's side. But Rodionova has come out to say that she says that she wished she could say that she's surprised, but I don't think she is, basically. But she's going to go to qualies instead, because she says the satisfaction of achieving it all absolutely on your own, despite all this stuff, is worth it. She's pumped for qualies, she says. But what do you guys think? Chris, do you think Rodionova should have been like a dead cert for a wild card, given that she's currently at her career best ranking? She's only just outside the kind of direct entry, and she's been doing super well of late.
Yeah, I think if I was her, I would feel very similar. I mean, are we surprised? No, she did predict this even before this happened. I think that they should look at the fact that they did award four wildcards to Australian players, as you mentioned. And you think that the Australian number one would be one of those players, irrespective of her age at 34. And it does feel like it's a preference of some of the younger players, or the players returning from injury, as opposed to the form players. And again, when you do look at some of the numbers behind it, I mean, they are all outside the world's top 100. So even having, you know, the wild cards being given to the Australian players in this way, I mean, it's not necessarily adding to the draw necessarily, where you might get wild cards more typically, like a Caroline Wozniacki returning, who is unranked in this sense, or someone who doesn't have a special ranking, whereas Naomi Osaka obviously can enter on a special ranking. So I do think it's a shame. I would have given Rodionova the wild card personally. And I think it does kind of just say that, you know, if you aren't at junior or more junior than she is, then you're not going to get the opportunities, no matter how many matches you play or how much you play for your country on the tour.
Do you think it's fair that, like, age counts against you if you're 34 when it comes to wild card selection?
I think it should count for her at this stage of her career, the fact that she is the number one and that she is putting the results together. And, you know, I think if it was in the UK, for example, I'm not sure that you wouldn't have got it based on your age. I think it would be done based on, you know, the British public would really want to celebrate someone who was having that sort of a story. So it's a shame. And I think it does come down to, you know, the experience that these younger players might get and might be able to take to future tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, she is at her career best ranking, and she's only just missed out on cracking the top 100 and for the first time. So, I mean, although she's 34, she's at her career best. So age shouldn't really be a factor. But, and we, you know, a lot of players are playing way past that these days. So, yeah, perhaps, I'll be interested to see what all the other wild cards actually do when
Let's
they
hope
get
she
there.
Qualifies, right?
And if she qualifies, and maybe they're drawn in round one, and she beats one of them.
That tweet she put out, you know, she obviously feels like she's got a point to prove and is pretty pumped up. So she's put a little bit of pressure on herself there to come through qualifying now.
And if she doesn't, she definitely won't be getting that wild card next year after that tweet.
No.
Yes. Yeah.
No. Well, let's have a look to see what's happening this week before the big You know, the big show commences next week with the Australian Open. We've got four events this week: the WTA 500 and ATP 250 events in Adelaide. Plus, we've also got a 250 WTA event in Hobart and a 250 ATP in Auckland. So, Adelaide, we've got Rybakina as the top seed, JPEG as the second seed. Interesting that Rybakina is playing both warm up tournaments.
Well, she barely had to hit a ball over in Brisbane. I mean, she lost 15 games. Maybe she does need to warm up for the Australian Open.
I mean, just on this, what are your thoughts on with seeing these 500 tournaments week before
two
Australian
of them in a row.
Open? It's a bit
push it
feels
back
a bit
week
much.
Almost. Yeah,
it doesn't feel right to me.
I agree.
I think one was fine, but two is a bit much. If I was a player, I'd probably play 2 weeks prior, but not directly the week before. But I mean,
you do
an
Emma
player.
Emma Raducanu, the perfect preparation.
And then the ATP 250, Ben Shelton is the top seed in Adelaide, and Cam Norrie is the second seed. So well, be interesting if we got a top two seed final with those two in Adelaide. Personally, that, I think that would be pretty
Gasquet's
decent final.
Return to the tour, he's been hitting with Rafa, he's back, and we also have Shapovalov is back as well. So,
and Ogier Aliassime, like, what are we expecting from him this season? I mean, last season was pretty much a season to forget, I feel.
Well, he did win that title, and hopefully that's fresh in his memory as opposed to the losses he had. And he's too talented not to be back in the top 10. I really believe that.
Yeah, come on, Felix. And sorry, that's Auckland, not Adelaide. Yeah, Cam Norrie playing in Auckland because obviously his family out in New Zealand there. But Adelaide does have Tommy Paul as the top seed, Nicholas Yarry as the second seed. And, oh, Seb Korda, who, well, I don't know what to expect of Korda. I know in the past I've predicted him and had high
you
hopes.
You love it,
but
yeah.
I haven't today. And then
Jack
last
Draper.
But not least,
yeah.
Hobart. Yeah, Jack Draper as well.
Jack Draper, first, could this be first today. Tour title? I mean, he's playing very good tennis.
I
at
think
the
he
moment.
Could win it. I really do. Yeah.
He beat Byers comfortably today. I would love
shots.
To see Draper go on and on and on.
Well, let's see.
I mean, Dan Evans, I think, also in action in Adelaide as well. And then just, yeah, last but not least, Hobart. Elise Mertens, top seed. Joe, I know you like a bit of Elise Mertens
against Danielle Collins, unseeded Danielle Collins.
She's already won.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Straight sets. Yeah. She's put down a marker for the field. But Sophia Kenin's taking that, surely, or Dollar High, Joel.
Exactly. Well, Peyton
Stearns has actually also gone out.
My time zones are all over the shop at the moment.
You can see which one I'm looking at the live scores for. It's not the ATP this week.
Oh dear. Well, so lots to happen. We'll be probably catching up a little bit later in the week on those when we preview the Australian Open once the draws are out. That will be our next episode. So you won't have long to wait to hear our dulcet tones again. Breakpoint season 2, though, drops on Wednesday on Netflix. So if you are a Tennis Weekly fan in particular, if you're a big fan of us, you might want to watch episode 1 in particular.
We'll leave it there. We're not
so
going to say anything
more.
That's
all we're
more.
Saying.
But yeah, you might want to watch episode 1 in slow-mo. We're going to be doing that anyway. But yes, we're going to leave it there. Listeners, thanks so much for listening to our first tour catch-up of the season. Remember to donate to our crowdfund. The link is in the description, as well as vote for us in the Sports Podcast Award. The link for that as well is in the description. But for now, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come from the ATP and WTA tours.
We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. So if you like what you're hearing, then do make sure to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. They really do mean an awful lot. And a big thank you to everyone who's left us a very kind review so far as well. We do love to read them, and it really helps others find the shows as well.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X. And the handle for them at Tennis Weekly Pod. Purchase Tennis Weekly merch, etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast. You can email the show, tennisweeklypod@gmail.com, or check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back on Thursday at Tennis Weekly HQ for our Australian Open draw preview. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.